This is the Ethanol Report. I'm speaking with Brooke Coleman, Executive Director of the Advanced Ethanol Council, and we're going to talk first about the CBO report, that's Congressional Budget Office report, that was released last week about the renewable fuel standard. And Brooke, you had some comments to make about that report, and why don't you tell me what you thought of that?
There's one thing that really sticks out, and from my perspective, you can't really get beyond it, and that is that they didn't look at the benefits of displacing crude oil for demand on gasoline and diesel. And so when you're looking at the RFS, the entire purpose of it is to displace our demand for chiefly foreign oil, but also to reduce our dependence on petroleum in general. And Congress passed it because, for the very reason that when you're dependent on one type of fuel, there are all sorts of macro and microeconomic effects that are generally bad for the consumer in terms of higher gas prices and price spikes and what have you. And so the CBO went out and said, all right, we're going to look at the impacts of the RFS, and but we're going to just sort of not pay attention to that aspect. And from my perspective, you cannot look at the RFS, you cannot analyze it in any way if you don't make an effort to go into that. So from there, it doesn't really matter from my perspective what else is in the report, because you've failed so miserably at sort of this threshold question by not including it that it's not really worth the paper it's written on.
Would this report have any impact on EPA's decision-making process regarding the volume requirements for biofuels for 2014, which we have yet to get a final rule on?
It shouldn't. You know, EPA's analysis, my guess is they're looking at the CBO report and having a similar private conclusion that we are, because their analysis of this thing, whether you agree with it or not, is far more robust than what the CBO did. The CBO just basically took a look at the marketplace, made a couple of assumptions, left out the most important thing, and then put in a report that's going to have the impacts of X, Y, and Z. And so I seriously doubt that the CBO report is going to influence EPA. It was the House, of course, that requested it. Maybe they know their customer from the perspective of what they're looking for. Obviously, the Energy and Commerce Committee over there wants to see the RFS repealed, at least the majority does, and we've known that for a long time. And so I don't think that too many people that have any sort of substantive understanding of the RFS are going to look at this report and say, wow, that affects my decision. But the risk, of course, is that politicians who are really just looking at this whole thing from a political level can look at this report and say, hey, you know, that's sort of an unacceptable outcome, any sort of gas price increase. And that's why, you know, this report is so irresponsible.
Well, how does that report affect what you deal with, and that is advanced biofuels?
The report is really about advanced biofuels. So what the report does is it looks at three scenarios. One is total repeal, in which the RFS goes away, and obviously it's hard to come to the conclusion that there would be a negative consequence if you're now looking at an increase in petroleum dependence, right? So they left that off the table. They then say, well, what if the EPA does what it has proposed to do? And we've been saying for a long time that what the EPA has proposed to do is the equivalent of calling a timeout and allowing oil companies to control the RFS. So not surprisingly, there aren't too many negative effects from doing that either, because it's not a transformative proposal in terms of promoting more renewable fuel use. And then the third scenario, which is where they draw all their sort of scary numbers from, is that, you know, assumes that if EPA puts a blindfold on and sort of doesn't bring any intellectuality to the program and says we're just going to ram it into the oil markets and not use any of the flexibility provisions, that there might be some impacts. And if you look closely at what those impacts are, they're basically saying, well, we're going to have to, if we do that, we're going to have to use extraordinarily higher volumes of advanced biofuels, and we have to push the industry to lengths that they're not ready to go to, and therefore there's going to be impacts on the marketplace. And nobody in our industry, at EPA, at the White House, is proposing to do that. The RFS is engineered so that it allows flexibility and allows the volumes to be changed based on the rapidity of the commercialization of advanced biofuels. And that's something that is there and totally ignored by the CBO. So there's, if you read that report, there's sort of this negative pall over the emergence of advanced biofuels, when truthfully, it's very, very exciting, and it means there's going to be more consumer choice at the pump.
Let's talk about that. Where are we at as far as the commercialization of advanced biofuels?
In our industry, the cellulosic biofuels industry, we're just hitting the commercial deployment phase. And we now have the first wave of commercial plants. We have DuPont's plant in Nevada, Iowa. We have OTSM's in Emmitsburg, Iowa. We have Avangoa's plant here in Kansas. We already have the plants in Vero Beach, Florida, at INEOS, and that's just the first wave of plants. Quad County, for example, is adding corn fiber. There's a number of other projects that add corn fiber. There's a number of sorghum projects. Beta Renewables is working on getting construction going in their project in North Carolina. This is an industry that, notwithstanding very, very difficult financial times, is really coming online strongly. And that's what really raises questions about what the White House is doing. It's why, from a timing perspective, it is such a deleterious proposal. And, you know, I think the White House is realizing that the industry that suffers if the RFS is plundered at this point from the methodological standpoint is the advanced biofuels industry that they claim to support.
Well, and as we're going into the 4th of July holiday, we're seeing, you know, they're saying we're going to have record gas prices. We're looking at the situation in Iraq right now, which has an impact on our gas prices. And the advanced biofuels and frankly, any renewable fuels at this point has a great story to tell, as you pointed out from the very beginning, that we are replacing foreign oil and that makes a difference in the price. And what would the price be now if we weren't replacing some of that foreign oil with renewable fuels?
An oil economist with no historical ties to the ethanol industry has modeled this exact question and came to the conclusion that in 2013 alone, consumers saved at least hundreds of billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, because the RFS added the equivalent of Ecuador to U.S. gasoline supply during a period of extreme tightness between supply and demand globally. And he focused on that. That begs the question, okay, well, why then are we talking about going backwards, actually cutting the RFS to levels that are actually lower than what we put out in 2013? It doesn't square with what is probably our biggest economic vulnerability, and that is our dependence on foreign oil. It doesn't square with the desperation that we feel when we look at Iraq and the refinery outages there and control of oil there. Iowa puts more ethanol into the U.S. gasoline marketplace than we import volumetrically from Iraq from a gasoline equivalency perspective. And so there's a left-hand, right-hand problem at the White House.
Well, the last time I saw you, Brooke, the last time we talked was at the National Ethanol Conference in February when an EPA official there told us that they expected to have a final rule on the volume obligations under the RFS by now, by the end of June. Have you heard anything? Where do we stand at this point on that?
Well, we're on a day-to-day type of scenario right now. I mean, what happened mechanically is they were saying the end of June because they had to get it done by July 1st because they had extended the 2013 RFS compliance year for the oil companies through June. They then extended it again through September. What was happening before is that he had done in June, and what's happening now is they have to get it done by the end of September. All of this perpetual delay, of course, adds investment uncertainty from the cellulosic biofuel perspective, so that's not a good thing. On the bright side, I think this delay is a reflection of our ability to go and make it clear to the White House that they're in the wrong place and they have to get back to the right place. And, you know, 9 times out of 10 when there's a delay, it's a bad thing. But we're actually taking this delay at the Advanced Ethanol Council as a sign that they're trying to get it right. And we don't want to see delays past the new deadline, September 30th. They have plenty of time to get it right between now and then. But, there's a pretty good chance that we would have seen the wrong outcome had they done it on June 21st, and we're happy that's not happening.
Well, now, when the EPA proposal was first put out last November, some folks in the industry thought that would put a damper on congressional efforts to repeal the RFS. And we did see for the first few months of the year, it did seem like it was pretty quiet. But we've been seeing some new bills being introduced now, including one from Congressman James Lankford of Oklahoma called the Phantom Fuels Elimination Act. Do you maybe see that as a positive sign that EPA's proposal will be walked back?
It was always a mirage that this proposal was going to somehow ameliorate our problem in Congress. It was actually just the opposite. So we faced that argument, and what they basically said was, hey, you know, our proposal deals with Congress. Well, it dealt with Congress because the proposal was killing the RFS and just dressing it up as something else. So, yes, Congress would not have been coming after the RFS as aggressively if EPA's proposal killed it at the administrative level. As long as the RFS is substantive, as long as it's transformative, as long as it pushes oil companies to do something they don't want to do, it will be a target on Capitol Hill from those who support the oil industry and are willing to go after what is at the top of the oil industry's list with regard to policies that threaten their control of the pump. So that's not going to change. What's really ridiculous about it, though, is the way that the oil industry got this proposal to be authored by EPA is they went at the administration with bogus RIN claims, Carlyle Group, Delta, PES, some of the refineries on the East Coast, and said, look, there's no way out of the box for us. You have to change this thing. You have to gut the RFS or we're going out of business. And they were obliged with the proposal. And so the idea that listening to the oil companies' bad arguments and buying them is somehow helpful to us on Capitol Hill is actually quite silly, because if you reward bad behavior at the administration level, you will certainly get more of it at the legislative and political level. And so actually what's happening here is we're trying to get this proposal back on track, get the program back on track, so that that information does not rule the day and distort every energy discussion that we have going forward.
To hear Congressman Lankford call this phantom fuels again still, when you did point out that we do have next generation biofuels being produced right now commercially, does that frustrate the Advanced Ethanol Council?
Yeah, of course it frustrates us, but the Advanced Ethanol Council is a political group and we're used to political talking points, and they will continue to say phantom fuel. It's a talking point and a term that they've worked hard to impress upon people. It's bogus for a number of different reasons, not just because we actually exist now, but EPA has voluntarily remanded the past rules in which they were over-aggressive. So the oil industry has not been made to comply with targets that are too high when it comes down to it. The EPA has relieved that compliance obligation, but you know that doesn't keep the oil companies from going to Congress and saying we have to use a fuel that doesn't exist, because there are a lot of people up there that don't ask the real questions. So it's frustrating, but it's also par for the course.
And that's the Ethanol Report. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.